Welcome to NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Here are today's top stories. President Trump addressed the 74th United Nations General Assembly today for the third time since his presidency began. He spoke on a range of topics, including China, Iran, and illegal immigration. President Trump responds to a whistleblower complaint that says he had an improper conversation with the president of Ukraine. He accuses Democrats of trying to create another witch hunt. The UK's highest court rules that Boris Johnson's decision to suspend Parliament was unlawful, void, and of no effect, according to a unanimous decision by 11 judges. Amnesty International calling on the Hong Kong government to investigate police use of force against protesters. The human rights organization says only an independent inquiry will suffice. President Trump front and center this morning, delivering an address to the 74th United Nations General Assembly.
President Trump gave his third ever address at the annual assembly in front of other presidents, prime ministers, dictators, and royals from around the globe.
The United States, after having spent over $2.5 trillion since my election to completely rebuild our great military, is also by far the world's most powerful nation. Hopefully, it will never have to use this power.
As expected, he dedicated much of his address to global trade and described U.S. cooperation with U.K. Prime Minister Boris Johnson on a new U.S.-UK trade deal, post-Brexit. Likewise, he condemned China for its stance on trade, calling out the regime for currency manipulation, forced technology transfers, and the theft of intellectual property.
The second largest economy in the world should not be permitted to declare itself a developing country in order to game the system at others' expense.
As expected, he emphasized the situation in Iran, where tensions are still brewing between Tehran and the White House after the country's alleged attack on Saudi oil facilities.
The United States does not seek conflict with any other nation. We desire peace, cooperation, and mutual gain with all. But I will never fail to defend America's interests.
He restated that the world cannot allow Iran to have nuclear weapons.
It is time for Iran's leaders to finally put the Iranian people first.
He also announced that he will never ratify the UN arms treaty, saying that the U.S. will always uphold its Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms.
If you want freedom, take pride in your country. If you want democracy, hold on to your sovereignty. And if you want peace, love your nation.
This week, Trump is scheduled to meet with global leaders to focus on Venezuela. Also on his agenda is a meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Trump has not ruled out a meeting with Iran.
Making history yesterday, President Trump became the first president to hold a meeting on religious freedom at the United Nations. NTD's Miguel Moreno has more on the global call for support of religion from Manhattan.
The president said the numbers on religious persecution were hard to believe.
Approximately 80% of the world's population live in countries where religious liberty is threatened, restricted, or even banned. And when I heard that number, I said, please go back and check it because it can't possibly be correct. And sadly, it was.
And in the audience were survivors of that cruel reality. President Trump said that the protection of religious freedom is one of his administration's highest priorities, adding that this conference was long overdue.
President Trump announced that $25 million would be dedicated to the preservation of religious sites and relics, and that the U.S. would also form a coalition of private-owned American businesses for the protection of religious freedom.
Vice President Pence went over a range of crimes, including recent anti-Semitic offenses in the United States and the state-sponsored persecution against Christians and Uyghur Muslims carried out by the Chinese Communist Party, which is known to forcibly harvest the organs of prisoners of conscience, including from practitioners of Falun Dafa.
As the president often says, America is a nation of faith, and we will always stand for the freedom of religion of every person, of every race, and every creed. to live, to work, to worship according to the dictates of their conscience.
The president also condemned state-sponsored persecution and additionally urged other countries to increase the prosecution and punishment of crimes against people for their faith. Miguel Moreno, NTD News, New York.
President Trump defending his phone call with the leader of Ukraine after his conversation came under scrutiny due to a whistleblower complaint.
The complaint reportedly said that Trump asked for an improper promise from Ukraine's leader, Vladimir Zelensky. It said Trump asked Zelensky to investigate Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, who sat on the board of a Ukrainian energy company. Trump called the complaint a partisan attack.
We had a perfect phone call with the president of Ukraine. Everybody knows it. It's just a Democrat witch hunt. Here we go again.
In 2016, then Vice President Joe Biden threatened to withhold $100 billion in American loan guarantees to Ukraine if the country's top prosecutor wasn't dismissed. The prosecutor was accused of ignoring rampant corruption, but he was also looking into the energy company Hunter Biden was involved with. The prosecutor in question was voted out of office by Ukraine's parliament after Biden made the threat. Biden, Trump's rival in the 2020 presidential race, denies he was motivated by his son's interest and said he never discussed his son's business with him.
Trump's doing this because he knows I'll beat him like a drum.
However, Hunter Biden told The New Yorker that he did at one point discuss his business in Ukraine with his dad. Trump's critics accuse him of using a foreign power to get dirt on a domestic rival. But Trump says he's looking into potential corruption of the Obama administration.
We don't want our people, like Vice President Biden and his son, creating to the corruption already in the Ukraine, in Ukraine.
Trump is expected to meet with Zelensky on Wednesday on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly meeting. Holly Kellum, NTD News.
The second most powerful senator on the Senate Intelligence Committee says the United States needs a comprehensive plan to deal with threats from China.
Senator Mark Warner warned that China poses a challenge to the international community because of how it combines its military, economy, business, and technology.
Challenge not just to the United States, not just to the West, but to all nations committed to democracy, individual liberty, an independent judiciary, and the rule of law.
Unlike other countries, he said, all Chinese companies are required by law to act as an extension of the Chinese Communist Party. This allows China to use its businesses to advance its national interests. Werner has sponsored a bill that would create an office in the White House to deal with this threat.
No Chinese company, however global, is actually private.
Werner also said he intends to introduce legislation to address the use of shell companies for investments in the U.S. by the Chinese Communist Party and other bad actors. But he says the U.S. needs a broader strategy to address threats from China.
I think we need a comprehensive strategy to defend against China's bad behavior, to compete with China in the 21st century, and to strengthen the international order it seeks to upend.
Reporting by Kitty Wong, NTD News.
Boeing will soon begin paying financial assistance to the families of victims of the two 737 MAX crashes. The company has set up a fund that officials say will address the family and community needs of those affected, pledging $100 million. Half will go to the relatives of the victims. The other half will back education and economic empowerment in affected communities. The families of 346 victims will get over $144,000 each. Boeing, meanwhile, is facing numerous lawsuits and investigations linked to a 737 MAX. It's not clear if the plane will be allowed to ever fly again. U.S. Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao announcing yesterday nearly $1 billion in infrastructure grants to airports nationwide.
The nearly $1 billion FAA infrastructure grants will go to 354 airports in 44 states, Micronesia and Puerto Rico.
These investments in improved aviation infrastructure will position our country, so many of communities across America, to participate and benefit more fully in the growing economy.
Selected projects include the reconstruction and rehabilitation of runways, taxiways, aprons, terminals, and other critical infrastructure, maintenance of firefighting facilities, noise mitigation, and emissions reduction. U.S. Transportation Secretary Chao said the department is focusing on three priorities: safety, rebuilding and refurbishing, and engaging with new technology to prepare for the future.
This administration is working hard and distributing a great deal of the infrastructure resources necessary to maintain our country's infrastructure.
This is the fifth allotment of the total $3.18 billion in Airport Improvement Program funding allocated this year for airports across the U.S. Reporting by Sydney Wong, NTD News, New York. Today is the day when every American is reminded to do their civic duty. September 24th is National Voter Registration Day. Every fourth Tuesday in September is set aside to let potential voters know that they can register for upcoming elections. The unofficial holiday started back in 2012. According to the National Day Calendar, more than 300,000 Americans registered to vote on that inaugural National Voter Registration Day. With so many political views in the country, bridging the divide can be difficult. The differences were on full display as over 500 Americans were packed into one room in Grapevine, Texas. They gathered to debate, discuss, and dissect politics ahead of the 2020 election.
In the heart of Texas.
Last table on your left, they will check you in.
A little bit more serious, that's beautiful. Yeah, there, that's great.
526 Americans gathering.
I love this. Great. Thank you so much.
Upset about the partisan divide.
Let's be real.
This is an experiment, a scientific sample. Democrat, Republican, and Independent representing 47 states.
You are going to listen to other people whom you never ordinarily would encounter.
Reflecting who votes on Election Day.
Hey, how are you?
It's a four-day in-person poll called America in One Room. Before arriving, this group took one poll on the major issues in the 2020 election. Here,
it's a great question.
They listened to candidates, to experts.
This is really your time to have your voice heard.
And break into randomly selected small groups to talk.
I don't think I've ever talked to a 70-year-old white Republican. Until now.
You know, we're being stormed at the southern border, and that's a problem that needs to be dealt with.
The illegal immigrants that we have today, you can see it all of the time, waving their country's flags, burning the American flag.
Sure, on TV you see the ones that do all this crazy stuff, but most of them work.
Like the country, this group is deeply divided about immigration.
I feel like you should have a wall, a border wall.
And along comes ICE, deports them. How can we continue to do that
in America?
We don't want to learn your language. We don't want to follow your customs. We follow our own customs. And to me, it looks like they don't want to become Americans.
At the end,
and this is how your voice will be heard.
A closing poll to see if there's been any movement on the issues, but already visible.
Like, it's opened my mind to see that I need to listen to other people's views.
Is the recognition that there is unexpected power.
I really enjoyed you being here.
And bridging the divide.
I have enjoyed this beyond measure.
For years, Chinese money has been the darling of the real estate industry, but that has been changing. NTD's Penny Zhou has the story.
U.S. home sales to Chinese buyers are likely to drop to an 8-year low, according to a new report by Reuters.
So every other article in the news today in real estate is high-end of the market struggling, luxury market struggling. A lot of that is because of the decline in the Chinese buyer.
According to the National Association of Realtors, Chinese buyers now account for 11% of all foreign sales and remain the top buyers in 2019. But the investment dropped a significant 56% in the year before this March. Multiple factors, including the trade war, Chinese restrictions on moving money out of the mainland, a slowing Chinese economy, and the dollar strength, have fueled the decrease in recent years. Jason Haber from Wahlberg Realty said,
Many of his Chinese clients moved their money out through Hong Kong, but the ongoing pro-democracy protests and possible changes to the U.S.-Hong Kong relationship are creating more uncertainty.
Everyone's watching that to see what's going to happen. I think that's a very significant geopolitical event that could have very significant consequences here. The longer that goes on, and the tension between mainland China and Hong Kong could have reverberations in our real estate market here.
Haber said domestic buyers have been able to fill up some, but not the entire gap.
That the American buyer can't, as a whole, make up that difference. They can make up a big piece of it at lower prices.
American buyers made 5 out of 10 most expensive purchases in 2018, compared with only 3 in 2015, while the number of Chinese buyers in the top 10 decreased from 3 to 0. Penny Zhou, NTD News.
Up next, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson criticizes collapsed travel company Thomas Cook as stranded tourists try to come back to the UK, and more when we return. A bitter blow for the British Prime Minister. The UK's highest court rules that Boris Johnson's decision to ask the Queen to suspend Parliament was unlawful, void, and of no effect. A unanimous decision by 11 judges. The Speaker says Parliament is to return tomorrow morning.
A momentous ruling this morning. Earlier this month, Prime Minister Boris Johnson suspended Parliament for 5 weeks. Now the nation's highest court has ruled her suspension unlawful, saying that it stopped Parliament from playing its role before the Brexit deadline of October the 31st.
The court is bound to conclude, therefore, that the decision to advise Her Majesty to prorogue Parliament was unlawful.
Boris Johnson says he will respect the verdict but will still leave the EU on October the 31st.
Yes, obviously this is a verdict that we will respect, and we respect the judicial process. I have to say I strongly disagree with what the justices have found. I don't think that it's right, but we will go ahead, and of course Parliament will come back.
A verdict that has shocked experts like Robert Craig.
I don't think I knew anybody who seriously or even jokingly suggested that it was going to be unanimous either way. So that was an immense shock. But the second stage of the shock was the remedy they granted, the fact that they said prorogation had never happened.
The Speaker of the House of Commons says Parliament will resume Wednesday at 11:30 a.m.
I have contacted party leaders, and where that has not been possible, senior representatives of political parties, in order to inform them of my thinking and to prepare the way for the House of Commons to do its work.
Earlier, some members of Parliament revealed they were preparing to return. Meanwhile, the Leader of the Opposition calls on Boris Johnson to resign
and become the shortest-serving Prime Minister there's ever been.
Boris Johnson, though, is on the other side of the Atlantic at the UN General Assembly in New York. The ruling says he's unlawfully suspended Parliament, but he's determined to deliver Brexit and is due to return to the UK on Wednesday. Jane Worrell, NTD News, London.
After the collapse of Thomas Cook left hundreds of thousands of passengers reliant on the British state to repatriate them, Prime Minister Boris Johnson questioned whether bosses should have paid themselves so much ahead of its demise.
Boris Johnson has taken aim at Thomas Cook's bosses after the travel firm's collapse left hundreds of thousands of holidaymakers stranded. The UK Prime Minister questioned whether they should have paid themselves so much ahead of its demise. Ministers decided there was no sense in bailing out Thomas Cook, arguing it would have been a waste of taxpayer cash to pour money into a business that wasn't meeting customer needs. Thomas Cook's hotels, resorts and flights catered to 19 million customers a year. Currently, around 600,000 travellers are stranded abroad. Repatriation efforts have already seen some relieved passengers put on flights home, but there's a long way to go. Britain's aviation regulator has said around 135,000 more people are expected to return over the next 13 days, and many will need the help of governments and insurance firms to get back. Thomas Cook's demise was announced in the early hours of Monday, after the company failed to secure a deal with creditors or receive a government bailout. The collapse sparked alarm at hotels, where some customers have been asked to pay their bills again by out-of-pocket resort owners.
French authorities have searched the Paris property of deceased sex offender and U.S. financier Jeffrey Epstein and that of his associate. A source from the Paris prosecutor's office said the searches at Epstein's property and the modeling agency of an associate have been completed. Last month, France opened a preliminary probe to see if Epstein committed any sex crimes on French soil or against any underage French victims. Epstein was arrested on July 6 and pleaded not guilty to charges of sex trafficking. The 66-year-old died on August 10th in his jail cell in New York. An autopsy report concluded he hanged himself. Up next, South Korean lawmakers say the United States and North Korea are expected to resume talks soon. North Korea's leader is also expected to have face-to-face talks with China's leader. That and more after the break. South Korean lawmakers said today that North Korea and the U.S. could resume working-level talks on denuclearization within weeks.
The National Intelligence Service believes it is highly likely that working-level talks will be held within 2 to 3 weeks. If they reach an agreement, it expects that a third North Korea-United States summit could be held before the end of this year. Lawmakers also indicated North Korean leader Kim Jong-un could visit China for a fifth summit with Chinese leader Xi Jinping before his summit with Trump. They added that depending on the progress of denuclearization talks, Kim could visit South Korea when leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations gather in November.
Amnesty International today urging the Hong Kong government to investigate police use of force during nearly 4 months of protests and encouraging Beijing to safeguard protesters' right to peaceful assembly.
Amnesty International said the proposed extradition bill was the latest manifestation of a steady erosion of human rights in Hong Kong.
The Hong Kong government is failing to facilitate, failing to allow allow peaceful assembly, to allow critical political speech because of the concern that somehow this would be violating the one country, two systems principle.
Many peaceful protests have degenerated into running battles between protesters and police who have responded with tear gas, water cannon, rubber bullets, beanbag rounds, and several live rounds fired into the air. Police, who have also been seen beating protesters on the ground with batons, say they have shown restraint on the streets in the face of increased violence. In a report released on Tuesday, Amnesty also urged the Hong Kong government to investigate police use of force during the nearly 4 months of protests.
You have this clear duty to protect human rights and to facilitate the enjoyment of human rights in Hong Kong. Please show that commitment, even if it means pushing back against this narrative of the fear of threats to national security that Beijing is sending.
Rosenzweig said only an independent inquiry into police actions as protesters have called for will satisfy the people of Hong Kong. NTD News.
Up next, museum reveals new historical artifact that survived the Holocaust, sheds new light on how Jews were able to persevere to preserve traditions while persecuted, persevere with their beliefs, and more on that story after the break. Uber received a temporary reprieve to continue operating in London today amid safety concerns.
London's transport regulator, TfL, has granted Uber a 2-month license, not the 5-year term that Uber was hoping for. The ride-hailing giant has been embroiled in a battle with TfL, which previously stripped the app of its right to take rides. 2 years ago, TfL rejected Uber's application to renew its license due to safety concerns. In 2018, a judge granted Uber a probationary 15-month license, which expires on September 25th. TfL says the 2-month license comes with new conditions to ensure passenger safety, and it wanted more details from the company. The new conditions set by TfL cover ride-sharing, appropriate insurance, and driver document checks by Uber.
A never-before-seen artifact was revealed yesterday as part of the Auschwitz exhibition not long ago, not far away. NTD's Xu Wenrong has the story from New York.
the sound of crying for the victims of the Holocaust. This is a shofar, a ram's horn that is made into a special wind instrument that's used during important Jewish occasions. It was blown in Auschwitz 75 years ago, and a week before the Jewish New Year, it is blown again in New York City at the Museum of Jewish Heritage to pray for the victims of the Holocaust.
To hold this shofar and to say the memorial prayer, that broke my heart.
This shofar is a witness of sacrifice and persistence of hope, which was blown precisely because it was forbidden in Auschwitz.
The belief that there would be a tomorrow, the belief that despite the fact that the Nazis were trying to wipe out the identity of their prisoners.
Judith is an expert on the Holocaust. Her father, Cheskel Titer, survived the Holocaust together with this shofar, which was given by an anonymous donor who didn't survive the death march.
I don't think I'm going to survive. Take it and take it out and tell the Jews of the world, tell the people of the world, we had a shofar in Auschwitz that we blew that reminded us that we were human beings.
Chasko came out with the shofar and blew it for the first time when Jews were not going to their death but going to rebuild their lives. Since then, he has used it privately.
He would blow it every year for the people in our family and the women in our building who had just given birth. He used it. In fact, when they blew it now, when Rabbi Babich blew it, I closed my eyes and I could just imagine my father standing there as he would blow it every year.
Judith's father passed away many years ago. She says that this way she can fulfill the commandment to honor her father one more time. Reporting by Shuwen Rong, NTD News, New York.
And that's all for now. Join us again this evening for your NTD News. I'm Tiffany Meyer.